not respond the first time doesn't mean that it's not any good. One of the things, though, you have to be careful of, and I'd love to have some time with the printer up here, too, because, again, I've learned lessons the hard way. We did a package for Gary that was promoting, Gary North, that was promoting a seminar, and it was a good package, and it worked, so we decided we would send it out again. So we took the package, and I think we were mailing 20,000 pieces, which in some terms are real small numbers. We're mailing 20,000 pieces, and so what we did is we took a little piece of paper like the yellow one that I showed you a few minutes ago, and we wrote a little note from Gary that said, See, that's accurate. we wrote a little note from Gary that said, you may have seen this before, but for whatever reason you didn't respond to it. There's another opportunity. Please respond to this now because this may be your last chance. So we took it like the good little direct marketers that we were, and we just added it to the package, and off we went with our 20,000 pieces, going, well, that was easy. Until the dear friend of mine who runs our letter shop called and said, did you guys weigh this by any chance? And I went, no, you know, we just kind of assumed that it would be fine. Well, guess what happens if you're mailing first class and it goes over an ounce? The post office is not real considerate about charging you, a tenth of 29 cents in order to make your mail package work. They charge you the full 29 cents. But what happens when you've got 20,000 pieces that need an extra 29 cents? It starts adding up, and if you're mailing 50,000 pieces or 100,000 pieces, those mistakes can be pretty costly. Well, fortunately, because our letter shop guy caught it, we weighed it, and we ended up pulling it and having to redo it, which was a whole lot better for us to redo the piece, remail it, than it was to add another 29 cents on. So we learned those lessons sort of the hard way. I weigh everything now.
That's a key point, what you're saying. Printing is a lot less. It costs you a lot less to print an 8-page letter with an envelope, with an order form, and slide it inside of another envelope than it costs you to mail it. Right now, postage is about double the cost of printing. So if you have to reprint something, a lot of times it's cheaper to reprint it than to pay another ounce for postage. And if you're going to put a tenth of an ounce over, and you're going to ship an envelope that weighs 1.1 ounce, why don't you spend some time and just ship it that's got 2 full ounces? If you're paying the postage for 2 full ounces, why don't you just ship 2 full ounces? We have a question here.
Go ahead.
Hi, Karen. Brian Redfield. On your second mailing to the same list, how long did you wait before you mailed that second letter?
It was probably about 6 weeks.
6 weeks? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And it pulled as well as it did the first time.
I'm going to let you talk with that question for a few minutes.
Okay. Now, let me tell you what I'm supposed to be talking about here. ordering list. What I'd like you to do, if you would, is to turn in the blue folder to the first page is, I get this kind of stuff when I go to seminars and I file it and there's so much stuff to look at and read, I don't read it. This is one that I really would recommend that you go back and read. It's how to find a list broker. And a list broker is someone that's really valuable because if they know lists, they can really save you a lot of money. You can mail a package. A lot of times minimum orders are 5,000 pieces. You can mail a package, and if it doesn't work, the list broker isn't out the money. You're out the money. So you want to have somebody who's very competent, who knows lists, that you can trust to recommend lists to you if you're going to be mailing this, because when you start adding up 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 pieces, it adds up real fast. The other thing, and if I don't remember to do it today, Bill, if you'd remind me at another time, is to talk about how you price out what a direct mail piece is going to cost. This piece here that came from Jay with the zillion dollars postage on it costs a whole lot more than this metered piece right here with the window envelope. And we can talk about, it's probably too late today and I'm too tired, but because when I use numbers I have to be able to think. But there are ways to figure out how much a package is going to cost you. Is this going to cost you 35 cents a piece? Is it going to cost you 75 cents a piece, $1.25? When you start talking quantities of 5,000, 10,000, et cetera, you end up talking a lot of money. If you're doing $1 a name to mail a piece and you've got 10,000 names, you're talking a lot of money. On the other hand, one of the things that's been real good for me to understand is that how much do I have to spend to make X amount of dollars. And the thing that's been real interesting to me is in the direct mail business, a break-even is not a failure. If you have not lost money, you're in real good shape. So a lot of people will spend a dollar to make a dollar because they know that the residual income from that name and the use of that name is going to also provide income. So if you've got, if you spend a dollar to make a dollar and you've got a name, you may make a dollar 3 months from now on a different offer. You may rent that name for 20 cents a name. You may do any number of kinds of things, but that name is a valuable name. That's why I said the rose by any other name would smell as sweet. That name is very, very valuable. That's a person. That's a person who, particularly if they're a known product buyer, that's a person who is likely to look at your offer. They're likely to say, well, that looks interesting. I think I'll buy that. For those of you that didn't get it this morning, I happen to have a Macintosh, and I love my Macintosh. And I consider that I have a mixed marriage because my husband has an IBM PC and I have a Macintosh. And so we kind of had this little debate. Well, before I bought my Mac and used a computer, we got tons of junk mail that came in about computers, and I did not give a flying rip. Now if it comes in and it has Mac World, Mac User, Mac whatever, Mac Write, I go, oh, let me see that. Why? It's because they got my name from someplace, and I'm a qualified buyer. I bought something. I bought a Mac. And I assume everybody knows this, but product registration cards for guarantees are to capture your name. You know, if you've got a product that falls apart, you should be able to get that service whether or not you send in the card. But when you send in the card, they've got your name, and that's very valuable to them. Anybody disagree with that? That's real important because they've got your name. And then, like, I get tons, you know, I send in my name because I love getting junk mail. But I get tons of stuff from every computer outfit out there now that knows I'm a Mac buyer because that's the way I've qualified myself and I want to get it. So I'm really willing to look at it. So the whole point, now, again, this is the SRDS. I was fortunate enough that I had to mail this here, so I didn't have to carry it. Sucker's heavy. But this is a book of lists. This is a book of names that people rent. And what I'd like to show you as quickly as I can is to how to use this. If you look on here where it says analysis of direct mail listings, if you grab, and I think that library is a great idea. Fortunately, the people at SRDS were real nice to me, and they sent me some promotional materials, and they sent this to me, and they're real nice. But if this is the SRDS. I'll hold it up for you. Mm-hmm. This is what we were talking about before.
Karen, why don't you read the phone number inside so they can call an order if they want to order one?
I passed up the envelope that you have. Is information about how to get a free 20-day subscription to SRDS, and it's got the 800 number in it.
Let me explain something to them. You can buy this book, SRDS, and it probably has every mailing list ever written in it, and you can go through and analyze and tells you who's on the list and how much money they spent and what they bought and when did they buy it, what the frequency they bought it, you know, was it 3 months ago or 9 months ago, and how much the item was and what the nature of the item was and whether they're male and female and how old they're all. And all that is real nice. But you don't have time to look at the 20,000 different lists in there. And what you can do is you can call a list broker, if you have one that you can trust, and say, look, I've got this product.
Probably someone that's registered as a list broker.
Right. You can call and say, I've got this product. And what it is a series of videotapes for entrepreneurs who want to do better in business. And ideally, I'd like to find a mailing list of other people who bought a videotape in the last 6 months and paid at least $600 and paid with their Visa MasterCard. I'd like this list to be primarily males. Can you find me something like that? And then you hang up. And then about 3 days later, you're going to get either faxes of, you won't believe the number of lists out there of that are exactly that. You can be that specific. You can tell them that, and they'll do the work for you. Now, if you buy the list out of SRDS, or whether you go through a list broker, you're going to pay the exact same price, mm-hmm. regardless of who you buy it from.
That's right.
And list brokers are real good. We just bought the complete mailing list of a magazine. And the list broker said, you know, this is interesting. This magazine had a mailing list of 80,000 in December. Right now it's got a mailing list of active subscribers of 33,000. He said, boy, something crazy is going on here. They've dropped 50,000 subscribers. And when we're mailing to that list, that's important to know.
Mm-hmm.
It means something. It means that the, probably the people who read that magazine don't value what they read in that magazine. We used to advertise in that magazine, by the way. We used to run a sixth of a page full ad in that magazine. And what we discovered was the longer our ad ran, the less response we're getting. And it's supposed to be the other way.
Right.
We discovered that no one believed what they read in the magazine. And with the new editor who took over in December, it got worse. So the subscriptions dropped off, and the subscription base dropped off. Buying the list was good for us, and we're going to go ahead and buy all the expires because they're not mad at us. They're just mad at the magazine. But a list broker will tell you things like that, and they'll cut through all the hype that the magazine people tell
you.
Yeah,
and let's go through this real quickly. First, you'll see the type of list. You'll have a media identification code, the name of the owner, membership identification, such as DMA is a direct marketing association, address, telephone, zip. And basically, that's who is who's the list, the title of the list, and who the list manager is. For example, Gary North doesn't have his own list on premises. It's done out of a company in Arizona that manages his list. Carnegie Marketing manages Gary's list. And if you want to rent Gary North's list, you submit it through Carnegie Marketing. He doesn't have anything to do with it. Carnegie Marketing gets a fee, and they manage his list. They manage that list of names. Personnel, name of individuals and selling or service function, branch office, etc. Now, when you get down here in description, this is where it starts to get interesting. You've got a description of characteristics, type and kind of pattern, special features, special selection capabilities. And I want to talk a little bit about that. When you do a select, there are a lot of different ways you can get a list. If you want to mail 5,000, you don't necessarily have to take the first 5,000 that comes off the computer. You can do an nth select, which is random. You can select by zip code area. You can select by, there's a code that you'll see that is FFC. It's the first three digits. So if I want to mail Dallas and the surrounding Dallas area, and I don't want to do those specific zip codes, that whole area, I can sort by the first three digits of the zip code, and I can do that geographic area. You can select by any number of ways, and sometimes they'll charge you to select certain ways. Sometimes they won't. It sort of depends, and we'll get into that in a minute. Do you have a question? NTH, nth. Mm-hmm, that's what it's called. Nth select. And the computer will just pull them up magically. Probably.
Also, if you do an nth select, and your list works, you want to go back and buy the rest of the names?
They can suppress.
They'll suppress the ones that you already got, so you don't mail the same list twice.
Right. Which, you just kind of have to, you know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good. I mean, you may want to go back and do the same names twice because you may have 1% respond the first time and that second percent could go back and respond the second time. So you need to know what your offer is and what your target audience. This is also called target marketing, database marketing. There are a lot of ways of looking at what a list is called. A list source. This is really important. Are these people, it'll say direct mail. If these people are direct mail responsive, did they come from the newspaper? Did they come from the television? Where did they come from? If they're direct mail responsive, that keys you into they like direct mail. Down here, you'll see sources, where they came, how they developed. You'll get, I'll get back to that in a minute. The commission you have to pay, credit conditions, method of addressing. And this is something that is often confusing to people. Karen and I were talking about this before. A lot of times, people don't want to say they don't know what this is, so they just kind of nod their head, but they don't have a clue as to what they're getting. This is an example of, and we'll talk price here too. I would say, the printer here can correct me, there are four, you know, five ways to address an envelope. You can do it by hand. You can do it by a pressure-sensitive, you'll see PS label, a pressure-sensitive label. This is the kind, you know, that you peel off, comes on the envelope. You can do impact printing, which is, it doesn't have a label at all. And these are called four-up Cheshires. And it's just your standard computer paper, and it feeds through a little machine, and the little machine just kind of cuts it out, smacks it on, and this is how it gets addressed. If you look at, sucker's heavy. If you look at this one, this is the second opinion promotion that we got. Does it look like it came from a friend of yours? No, because most of the time, well, people are starting at Christmas time to put labels on their Christmas cards, but for the most part, when you see a label, you can assume it's the package is coming from somebody besides a personal friend, whatever. On the other hand, you need to look at how much it's going to cost. I've got quoted recently on pressure sensitive, I want to say 5 cents a piece, because these had to be hand affixed to the envelope. Somebody had to sit there, pull it off, put it on the envelope, and they were quoting me 5 cents a piece. Well, that doesn't sound too bad until you start multiplying it by 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 pieces. It adds up. These can be like 1.5 cents a piece. Well, a difference of 3.5 cents is a significant difference when you're mailing huge quantities. Am I doing okay, Karen?
Is that, when you say they're 5 cents per piece, that's actually them applied onto the envelope, or just buying them from the list broker?
No, that's attaching them to
the
envelope.
Okay, I wasn't clear on that.
When you buy a list, typically you buy names in batches of 1,000. So you'll see 125, 85, 75 slash M, which is $125 per 1,000. And that's how you buy the names. Usually there's a minimum of 5,000. You do not have to use all 5,000 if you want 1,000 names, which is such a small sample that it's really hard to get good statistics. The bottom is usually 5,000. When you have those 5,000 names, that's usually at least enough for a test. And if you were going to take a risk with your money and you were going to pay, you were going to buy 100,000 names, would you want to test 5,000 names first and see if you got a response, or would it seem like it would be a waste? You'd just go ahead and mail the 100,000 names. I'd want to test it first to make sure it works. My rule of thumb, and I'll give you a couple of these things, is I believe that a test is a planned failure. A test is a planned failure. What that means to me is I don't intend to make money on that. I want to break even, but this is money that I'm willing to risk to see if this package works or not. And it has to be a planned failure, because if you go out there and you're putting your money at risk and you're counting on the fact that it's going to work, then you're in big trouble if it doesn't work. So if you plan for it not to work, then you protect yourself. If you plan for it to be successful, you could end up in big trouble when you start mailing out a variety of different packages. The other thing is that, again, and I'll reiterate this, is that break even is considered successful because you haven't lost any money. If you're not out anything, you can afford to do it over again if you haven't lost anything. So it's real important to realize that when you're looking at what kind of response rate that you have, if you break even, you're doing okay. Ted, would you agree with that? Yes, absolutely. Because the name is valuable. The name is valuable to remail. The name is just incredibly valuable. The other thing, and I just like, again, this is a paraphrase for me of what a benefit is, and a lot of times the benefit will be something that's also on teaser copy. Your benefits are in your headline, your benefits are in your copy, your benefits are in your response device at the end. A benefit is what's in it for me. It's real simple. Bottom line is what's in it for me. And that's gonna be what the person says. What do I get from it? What kind of value is it? And if you're talking about perceived value, people are going to say, okay, if I'm going to put down $19.95 or I'm going to put down $15,000, I want to know what I'm going to get out of it, what's in it for me. And so if you put those benefits up front, then that's what's really important so that they know that. The other thing that someone told me...
Wait. Go back and talk about the formats that the labels come on.
Excuse me?
Talk about the formats that these labels come on.
Formats, what do you mean?
Yeah, you were talking about pressure-sensitive labels and how these labels are available to us.
Oh,
you didn't mention MagTape?
Yeah,
just get MagTape, because that's what most of us are going to be using. I mean, that's what Karen had a question about.
You can get them on MagTapes. MagTapes, okay, let me say one thing parenthetically. And that is, a lot of times you rent names blind. People do not just hand their names over to you because they're very valuable. So you have to trust the people that you're working with, whether it's your letter shop, whether it's your printer, whether it's your list broker, whoever it is, because they don't want people to just go duplicate their names and then mail them. If you're renting names, you have to be careful with how you do that. So a lot of times they'll send names directly to your letter shop, and we'll talk about letter shops in a minute, but they'll send the name to the letter shop. You don't even see it. You don't get the name. The name becomes yours when the person responds to your ad. And then you've got the name, and then that name's yours. You'll see if one of the interesting things is names are very valuable. And when partnerships split up and their names, the name is an asset. And you there are a lot of partnership agreements that decide, like a, I guess, prenuptial agreement on what's going to happen to the name if that partnership dissolves. Because that name is incredibly important if that person has previously bought from you. So you can get names on mag tape. If you're going to do impact printing, anything directly involved with your computer, you can get it straight from mag tape, and you don't have a printout like this. You don't have Sheshers. You don't have pressure sensitive. If you're doing a real small mailing, like maybe 500 pieces, well, then something like this is possible. And I know little places like Mailboxes or Mail USA or some of the little local mail shops will do 500 or 1,000 pressure sensitive, and they'll charge you a few cents. And if you're doing a small run, that's okay. These are cheap. On the other hand, they don't look real personal. If you go to MagTape or you go to, it was real exciting to see the envelope fold-out. Have they seen that yet? The envelope fold-out that has the impact printing on it that looks like the...
Yeah, if you look in that folder that you got from us that's got your name on it, you'll see four envelopes. All of them are personally addressed to you.
What's the first thing you look for when you look at your mail?
You see these? These are in your folder. And each one of them has your name.
Anybody, what's the first thing you look for when you open your mail?
Yeah, it's direct address.
Your name. And if it's spelled correctly? Yes. And then where do you look?
You've got two envelopes. Compare.
See where it's from? And then where do you look? See if it's first class. If somebody's taken the time, and this is my rule of thumb, thank you. If somebody's taken the time to spend the time and the money, on first class, I consider it more valuable. If I get bulk mail, even I don't always read bulk mail.
Now, there's a trick there, but it doesn't work right now because the postage just changed rates. But you can buy bulk mail, lick 'em and stick 'em
stamps.
And most of your consumers aren't
enough,
right.
Yeah.
They don't understand that just because it's got a stamp there, it's not bulk mail. And you can stamp rush on it. It can be bulk mail.
Right.
What these two forms are, and you've got these in your folders, is this is direct imprint, where we actually took the names off a diskette, threw our computer, and printed them directly onto the envelope.
And it looks like it came off of somebody's typewriter. And this is a label which looks like it came off somebody's computer.
Right. And which one of these envelopes would you open up first? And you see the difference?
Sure.
And this right here, you know, we're talking about response rates. A 1% increase can make the difference between a break-even and a 10,000 profit on a
Absolutely.
5,000 mailing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for the same postage. And remember, your expense is not in printing these directly on. Your expense is the postage. If you're going to send anything at all, your main goal is to get it open. And you should
absolutely.
Do absolutely everything you can to get that envelope opened. And if it means that you have to spend, and it works out to be a half penny more to direct address rather than to put a label on it, then this is what you obviously should do. It's going to save you money in the long run. Actually, it's going to increase your profits.
Is the name included where we can order those? You said you'd found them from...
We're actually going to do this tomorrow. We're going to print some here, and I'm going to show you how to do this tomorrow. And Wayne Bennett, who sits in the back,
he
can order for you. What happens is the company will only sell to printers. We found out the name by mistake because the company we bought them for sent us the invoice with a check by mistake. And then we contacted the company directly, and they said, "Are you a printer?" And we said, "Sure, we're one of the biggest in the state." And they did sell us some cases, but then Wayne, who is our normal printer, we had him set himself as a distributor for this stuff, and he can get it. Or he can give you the name and the address of the company, and you can have your own local printer set up, because they do want to sell in volume.
But you can only use a name, even if it's on mag tape, Karen, you can use it one time, and if you capture that name through an order,
yes.
Then it's your name?
Yes, I was getting ready to. Yes, you can use the name one time unless you've made arrangements to, you know, most of the time the term is renting the name, because in essence that's what you're doing. You're renting the name for a one-shot rental. You can buy names. You can buy lists. And then you can have the rights to mail them as many times as you want. But most of the time people will rent a name. And names can go for 5 cents a piece, and go for a penny a piece, 25 cents. You know, it depends on how qualified the person is as a buyer. Another thing that's really, well... that's real important to do is to seed your list. Does everybody know what seeding your list means?
No.
Well, seeding your list is a way to, that's particularly good for list owners who are renting out their list. So you put names of your in-laws and your friends and your whoever. Pardon me?
Dog.
Your dog, Fido. The computer does not know that Fido Anderson is a dog and not a person. And so if I start getting mail to Fido Anderson, I know that somebody's using my list, and I know who I've rented it out to, and I know how many times they've used that list. And so if I start getting things in the mail, that's real important to do. The other thing to look at is how clean a list is, because you can lose names if you've got a dirty list and how often the list is cleaned. By that, one of the things that I try to do when I'm managing a mail drop is to have it come to a P.O. box that I own, and I get the mail. And by that, I see how many have gone through the system that have no addresses on them, so that it was just a letter shop error. How many had no postage on it? Like, you get these returns, you've got the return, it comes to your post office, it's got a stamp on it and no address. Or you get an address of someone and no stamp. It just missed. And when you're doing large quantities of mail, that's going to happen. But you don't want to happen a lot, because those names are valuable. And then what you see is deceased. You know, if it comes back deceased, you know, sure, people die, but it's like, how many times, how old is that name? And you get really funny things back. I think it's funny. You get these really funny things back in the mail that says the person's, you know, deceased, and then they go in the expires pile. It just strikes me funny. Yeah?
What percentage rate do you consider to be a clean list?
That's a good question.
What's the question? Repeat the question, please.
What percentage do you know of response? Ted, do you have any comment on that, on what you would think, or Gary, on what would be a clean list? What kind of percentage of return? Seven? Five, yeah, somewhere in that ballpark, I would say. And so you get these...
25%. If it's 25% and you'll get rent lists, they'll 25% bid, then you've got a problem. You
That's
go to
right.
the list owner.
That's right.
And negotiate something with them, negotiate the bill.
That's right, because you want to know how, and one of the things your list broker can tell you is how often that list is cleaned, how often it's updated. And one of the things about first-class mail is when you get first-class mail and it's not delivered, it's supposed to go back to sender. And then the sender is supposed to take it and do something with it. If they've moved, change of address, whatever, then you'll get that, and that's one of the ways they update and they clean lists. So, you know, I just mailed them a Phillips publishing list. It was health and healing, and I got, on a 5,000-piece mailing, I got 2 change of addresses, and that was it. But it's a brand new list. It's only been out a year and a half. This particular list has been out a year and a half, and it's up to 226,000 subscribers.
Yeah, that's a trend we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But probably the number one trend in this country, which is going to rapidly accelerate, is health. Especially if national health care insurance passes, because no
right.
one in here is going to be able to buy their way into a doctor. You're going to sign yourself onto a list and wait. And in 2 or 3 years, you won't be able to afford to get sick or not to be healthy.
Really?
And health is the fastest growing trend.
But listen to this. So health and healing is a year and a half out. Phillips is publishing it. Tom Phillips is probably mailing 1 million pieces a month or something. Phillips can bankroll things. So is that exceptionally great that it's up to 226 or 228,000 right away? Would you be scared or would you be thrilled?
Scared.
That's right. Are these people going to renew? And it's valuable to make it on the front end, but you want the residual income from making it on the back end. So you send somebody a renewal piece, whether it's an insert or not. Is it going to cost you more money to acquire the name or more money to maintain the name? It's going to cost you more money to acquire the name the first time. So if you can maintain the name and you keep that person coming year after year after year, then you're going to make money on the back end. If you lose it on the front end, you acquire the name, but then you don't keep it, then it's not as valuable. So, and one of the things, and this is what I say before, is that someone said to me once that the product that you fulfill with is what you do to keep your, it's how you do your guarantee. It's what you do to support your copy. It's what you do to prevent returns. I mean, that what you're really selling is a person's response to the ad, to the copy that you wrote. And that when you fulfill, you know, you give 100% money back guarantee. Well, you want to keep the returns down. So if the product meets what you said it would, then people aren't going to return it. Do they really want the product? Well, you know, you open the product and it's really nice, but you get so excited about the copy and what it's going to do for you and all those things, that point in time is when a person's most interested in your product, and that's also the best time to resell them. I think Gary said that. You know, you get them right away. It's like, if I just subscribe to a financial newsletter, it's crazy to me that they ask me the first month I get the letter if I want to renew. They make me the special offer, and they say, if I renew now, I can get 2 extra years for another 15 cents or whatever the price point is. And I go, well, I guess that's a really good deal. Fine. I'm not disillusioned. They don't have to work, and they get that money up front. It works great. And so that's really the time that the person's most excited about the product is at the point of purchase.
That's why you want to buy a fresh list.
That's
one of the things that you're on your, when you talk to a list broker, you can say, I want someone who spent their money in the last 30 days or the last 60 days, and they can also tell you the dollar amount.
Now, there is debate as to whether a newly acquired name or a fairly mature name is going to be the best buyer. There's some people that will swear up and down that if the name is an older name and they've had time to establish rapport with, say, the newsletter editor, and they really like it and they're wonderful, then they'll go ahead and buy the product. The other philosophy is that if a person's new, they've just, you know, they've gone through the ad campaign, they've been convinced, they've purchased, that person's most likely. Depending on your product, you have to test it to find out how they're going to respond and what they're going to do. Let me go ahead and... Is this making any sense to anybody? I know what I'm talking about here, but is this making sense? Are you getting it? Okay. Anybody say no? Thanks. Okay. One of the other things that you need to know that's really crucially important when you're running a list is most people require you to submit a sample piece. So when you're renting a list, a lot of times they're going to say, before we rent you our list, we want to see a sample of what you're going to be mailing. I like it because it's protection. I think it's really important. But that means you have to have some semblance of an offer, of an ad to go out before they're going to give you your list. There are going to be different kinds of competitions. Phillips Publishing, for example, doesn't want you to sell a product that's competing with another product that they're selling. So they want to see it before they rent you the name. And if they don't have a problem with it, then they'll go ahead and approve it and you can mail it. But you're going to have some kind of draft of a piece. It doesn't have to be perfect, but you have to have some kind of piece together to submit to them in enough time. So if you decide tomorrow that you want to mail something, you need to realize that the turnaround time is going to be, you need to leave it 10 days. You need to at least have time to inquire, to rent the name, to get the mag tape or to get the labels, to get it to you, to get it to the printer, to get it to the letter shop, to get it in the mail. It doesn't happen it doesn't usually happen overnight. I've spent some long nights, but it usually doesn't happen quite that fast. You have to plan for it. Let's see, what else? This is just an example. These are the questions a list broker is going to ask you when they go to rent the list for you. This is a form from Phillips. A lot of companies have forms, and they just want to know, you know, what's required, what the price is per thousand, what the select is, the quantity you want, where you want it shipped to, so if it's going to your printer or your letter shop or wherever it's going, the format you want, mag tape, pressure sensitive, self-adhesive, key coding. Does everybody know what key coding is? If you look on your, let's see if I can find some mail here. Okay, here's an offer that came from John Carlson. Oh, this is an old list. In my days of my youth, before I got into direct mail, I did psychotherapy, I did marriage and family therapy, I have credentials, degrees in therapy, and so this is an old list that I went to the Family Therapy Network conference probably in 79, 80, 81. They're still finding me. I mean, there are names that are valuable, and this is a Aspen Publishers from Gaithersburg, Maryland. They found me. They're mailing it to me in Texas. I moved to Texas a year and a half ago. Somebody's managing that list, and they're finding people. Somebody's putting it in, and they found me. Well, right here it's got JBDF. I don't have a clue what that is, but it's some kind of key coding so that they know on the label where it comes from. Yeah, I'm sorry?
I just wanted to comment about that point that you're making, very important as to the recency of the buyers. I can tell you that in enterprise publishing, in 20 years, we never, ever found the one to get what's called hotline names, names that are the most recent buyers, because that's one of the hottest, the most passionate for other offers, not the older ones. I don't know of anyone else that would make that that would find a different response.
Yeah, and I think particularly with Gary's list, Gary North's list, there's customer loyalty. Those names, there are some names that have been there for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years. I mean, and they're just newsletter subscribers, and they're loyal, and they buy everything, and they buy all the products, and they are good names. But I think that I personally agree with the new acquisition. When a person's a hot buyer, that's when they want to buy, and that's the time that you can get them.
Yes, and one other comment I'd like to make is that we at Enterprise always looked at the acquisition of a customer as just the first step, and had felt that if we could bring in the customer at break even or better, that was the beginning of a long cycle of activities. Now, for instance, 60-70% of the people that come into Enterprise Publishing would be upsold another product. Our mailing list revenue, in other words, as the owner of the Enterprise list for many years, exceeded $500,000 in annual revenue. And that's all on the bottom line because you have basically expended all of your marketing costs to get the customer. You follow me? So from the owner of the list's point of view, it's what you really want to do is bring the customers in the front door at no cost.
Right.
And if you do better than no cost, that's marvelous. Then you can obviously do bigger and bigger mailings and so on. So that's how we always looked at it. Now, one final point. Some of the people here have talked about outside toll-free services and all. We've tested a lot of toll-free services outside for upselling purposes, for capturing the name. And everyone we've tested, and we didn't test them all, but we tested a lot, no one did as well as my own personally trained, hand-picked group of people who are inbound people who dealt with the customer. And I personally think it's usually a mistake to have other people handling your customers because that's the lifeblood of your business. They hire a bunch of college students or whatever it is, a lot of these toll-free companies, and they don't really care about the how long you retain the customer. And we found a lot of problems like people being oversold, misled, a lot of things. The scripts are harder to monitor. So be very careful if you work with it. There may be. We didn't work with the one that Bill works with, the outside service in Colorado. I'm glad there's a good one. But
they are good.
But I would be very cautious about who you work with if you're going to let anyone else talk to your customer. You sweat blood to get those customers.
Absolutely. Let me give you a quick illustration of this as well. I was doing a piece with Lisa, and it had an 800 number. And let me restate this over and over and over and over again. When you're mailing something, call the number that you have on the paper before you take it to the printer. Make sure it's the right number. Make sure that they answer the phone correctly. You don't want to drop 10,000 pieces and have the wrong number on there. That kind of thing happens. I've also seen numbers, and you know, and it's late at night and you're doing an ad and you're doing whatever, numbers get reversed. Make sure, you know, run your checker on your telephone numbers and find out if somebody's switched digits on you so that the telephone numbers are consistent throughout the piece. That's, Karen?
I have a question that's really not related to what you're saying, but I want to ask you this because it's been
hitting
me. We've done mailings before where we've done three stages of mailings all for the same product with a different angle, you know, and they work really well. And you get what, and when, the way we did that, we negotiated with a list manager for a deal for three mailings. And what I've always wondered is, can you negotiate with a list broker? Not, can you go to a list broker and say, I have three separate mailings I want to mail. Can I have a deal on the amount?
Yeah, and it depends on who's managing the list and who has access to the list to see whether they'll cut a deal with you. And a lot of times they will, but it kind of depends on the relationship between the list broker and the list manager and the how much the list is getting rented and those kinds of things. If the list is really hot, they may just say forget it. But if you've got a good list, you know, they may be willing to negotiate. So it kind of depends on the list and how good it is. But as far as the 800 number, let me just get back and say, so I had this piece going out, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and it just was in the process of hitting, and I didn't know if anybody had called or not. So I called the 800 number, and they answered the way they were supposed to, and they said, could you hold, please? And I timed it, and I sat on the phone for 6 minutes. At 3.5 minutes, they came back, and they said, I'll be with you in just a moment, and they put me on hold again. How long do you think people will stay on the phone waiting for someone to take their order? You think they'll wait 3.5 minutes? You think they'll wait 6 minutes? So I, of course, in my subtle, shy, retiring way, got the supervisor that day and said, I need you to know that I wrote this piece and I get paid by who responds to this offer. I get a percentage. I said, if you guys don't take the orders, I'm out the money. I said, I really need you to be on top of this. And they said, okay, just a minute, let me check the computer, and they stuck me on hold and they cut me off. and I went, So I called back. And they said, I'm really sorry, that hardly ever happens. I said, you know, what's the problem? They said, I don't know, it's not that busy here, I don't know what the problem is. Well, whatever the problem was, when those seconds are ticking away, when something's hit, and you're looking, oh, pull out your response curve for me, the little graph kind of deal. I'll stop in a minute, I promise.
Karen, you know, recently I called out to order a product, and this stunned me, and I got a recording saying all of our customer service representatives are busy at the moment, please call back.
No!
I really did. I was absolutely stunned. So there's some pretty stupid people out here.
Gary?
Yeah, I just want to underline what Ted Nicholas said. In 25 years, I have never found a single service bureau that didn't cost you a great deal of money instead of make you money. Not one.
Well, and again, I think it's really important, and I think most people here that have gotten responses and taken telephone calls, it's really important to answer those phone calls yourself and to answer 20 or 30 calls. Or if you're going to hire... This is a whole other area, but because of telemarketing. But the things that I hear in the, you know, sort of the industry-wide gossip, I guess, on what's working and what's not working is the things that are working usually will have a telemarketing follow-up. And telemarketing does work. And I had somebody call me the other day saying, we're going to be in your neighborhood exterminating, and, you know, because we're going to be in your neighborhood, we'll give you an extra deal. Well, I guess I had thought about it but not gotten around to it, and I went, sure, telemarketing does work. He happened to get me. I hang up on a lot of telemarketers, too, because I don't want... But every now and then it works, which is why they keep doing it. People don't keep doing things that don't work.
Karen,
Gary?
On regards to telemarketing, there's one thing all of you should know about. There's something called a CD-ROM. I don't know what that is, but it looks like a little CD disc. And a company called Phone Disc America in California will sell you two CD discs. And it has the name of the name, address, and telephone number of 160 million people, and you can just punch this thing into your computer. You punch in somebody's name and their phone number, and their address pops out. So if you get a list and you don't have a telephone number, you can enhance the list with that. There's another list that Bill Myers knows more about than I do, or another one of these shiny things. And it has all of the current addresses in the entire U.S. postal system on it.
Yeah, I've seen this.
And you can use that list to intermesticulate against your rented list on computers somehow, so that if the address is bad, you don't have to mail it. You can save yourself a lot of money.
Yeah, thank you. Which leads to another point about dupes. Duplicate names on lists, if you're mailing a variety of lists, you need to be careful on dupes, and there's a concept called merge purge, which I always thought was kind of a funny name, but where you merge lists and you purge off duplicates, and you need to be careful. You don't want to, and it's not that you just don't want to send a person the same person on four different lists. You don't want to spend the money to send four different lists. You'd rather send it to another name because that's a potential buyer. It's one thing to remail the same name. It's another thing to mail the name by mistake because you've got that person's name on four, five, six different lists. And one of the things that I think you'll find is that there are a number of people, I'm going to stop real soon. There are a number of people that are going to be on multiple lists. They have an interest in a particular area, and they're going to be on lots of lists. You just don't want to spend your money to mail that person 5, 10, 15 different promotions. Phil?
One of the things they've found is if you do find them on multiple lists and you want
to
test...
That's a good sign. That's right. Thank you.
And you want to test only a small segment, and you want to test your absolutely most possible
successful segment.
Take your multiples.
Thank you.
The people that have hit there, because they're going to be a much smaller percentage, and if they don't work for your offer, you can forget the rest of the list.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's a great point. If a person is on... Well, let's just lose present. If he's on Gary Halbert's list, if he's on Bill Myers' list, if he's on Mark Skousen's list, and if he's on Howard Ruff's list, that's an interesting combination, isn't it? If he's on all these different lists, chances are, if you've got something that's similar, that person may be likely to buy it. So that's a very, very valuable name. That's a real good name. Thanks, Phil. One comment, Karen, and then I promise I'll stop. I promise. Okay, rule of thumb, you can mail a bad offer to a good list, and there's a probability that it will work. If you mail a good offer to a bad list, there's a probability it won't. It doesn't necessarily mean that the offer was bad. If you have a bad list, it's not going to work. If you've got a real good list, those people are likely to buy just about anything. And even if you send them sort of a mediocre offer, they will respond to it because it's a very good list. So the list is very, very, very important when you send out your offer. And it's one of the wonderful ways that you can use testing, and you're going to hear it till you're sick to death of it, because that's the way you find out how good your offer is, how good your list is, and if you've got all the elements to make it a successful package.
Okay, one thing you didn't talk about because you didn't have time because we cut you off is that suppose you mail over the next year 100,000 pieces and you get, somehow, you get 10,000 sales. Well, in addition to the profit from those 10,000 sales, you have a list that you can rent 100 times or 200 times or as many times as you like, or you can sell that list. So there is more to it than just going out and sending letters out. And that's one of the things that Ted Nicholas and that all of us know is that our best customers are our own list. My list is not for sale. Gary's list is not for sale. Ted's list probably is for sale because they sell a number of products. But when you have a list, that is your most valuable resource. And so that's one of the things. And when we talk about having this stuff on computers, we're going to show you.
Yeah, because accurate record keeping and keeping those names and keeping track of them. And, you know, I agree that one of the things that I've really appreciated about Group M is that their fulfillment is excellent. And as a list broker and as a person who coordinates direct mail campaigns, I have a real problem with companies that do not fulfill in a timely, responsible way, because my name's on the line, the person's name is on the line, and it's a trust, it's a relationship, and I want that product fulfilled and fulfilled well. I want the customer satisfied because that's a valuable customer. And so if you are good to your customers, if you fulfill in a timely way, there's nothing like the frustration of ordering something and not getting it. You know, you just lose your confidence. And the more speedy you can, I guess I lied, Karen, I'm sorry I wasn't done. The best way that you can service your customer is to fulfill and to give them what they want and to make them happy, and then they're going to buy more. Okay, now I'll stop, I promise.
Okay, we're going to take 5 questions and then we're out of here.
Karen doesn't want to take 5.
No questions. We're going to work with Karen tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday. We're going to work a lot more on list. List is really the key to making direct mail work.
Yeah, because there's a whole lot that
There's a large psychology, and we're going to talk more about the psychology, and you're going to see it now.
Which is why I love direct mail.
Right. We're going to spend probably 2 to 4 hours a day for the next 3 days working on lists, and you're going to understand why it's so important to have list brokers. Right now, we have 2 more speakers today. We have John Eager and Gary Halbert. What we're going to do is we're going to take a 7-minute break. We're still going to be out of here before 8 o'clock this evening. Let's make this a quick break, just enough to stretch, enough to hook John up.